This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic delights at Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salad, appetizers, and desserts, with vegan and gluten-free offerings, as well as craft beer and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and dinner 7 nights a week, with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also brought to you by Rouse and Revolt Recycled Fashion in the Garden Walk Mall at 225 Main Street in Chico. Rouse and Revolt buys, sells, and trades name brand, fashionable, gently used clothing and accessories. Open Tuesday through Sunday at 11 a.m. and at 10 on Saturday. Find them on Facebook or call 774-2658 for more information. Rouse and Revolt will donate a portion of their proceeds to local nonprofits each month. So welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today, we're going to talk about the results of a little social science research into dating and veganism. And then we're going to get into what the Animal Welfare Act, where it started and where it is today, is all about. And we will wrap up with the vegan calendar of events, of course. So, VegNews.com reported on a social experiment that the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, commonly known as PETA, ran on the dating app Tinder. Of course, I have to ask Jeannie why I got the Tinder story, but it has some tips in here. So 50% more women were interested in a man when he was wearing a vegan t-shirt than when he was wearing one that promoted bacon. You hear that, guys? PETA recently conducted an experiment to see whether vegans or meat eaters get more positive responses on this dating application Tinder. They created two similar profiles for, we'll call him Peter, a 29-year-old male in Melbourne, Australia. One profile featured a main photo of Peter wearing a shirt with the word vegan written across the chest, a short biography that stated vegan for life, which is our secret code, and several photos of Peter, including one with him holding a watermelon at the grocery store and one with him holding a puppy. The alternate, sorry for clearing my throat on you guys. And the alternate, more bacony profile was nearly identical, except that Peter's shirt in his profile had the word bacon across it instead of vegan, and it showed Peter fishing and holding up a package of meat at the market. No meat market pun intended. Additionally, his description included the phrase "bacon for life."
Ta-da. What a winner.
Yeah. And there are real people like this, of course. After 1 week, Peter's vegan profile gained 109 matches and 11 inbox messages, while his meaty, meat-centric profile received 54 matches and only 3 messages. So, you know, that's pretty statistically pretty impressive numbers. And it also shines a light that the popularity of veganism amongst Australians is on the rise, as evinced by a Google Trend report last year that identified that vegan was the most popular dietary search term. And PETA's experiment proves that even that those looking for love down under are now preferring cruelty-free partners. I know on Instagram, I tend to get a lot of likes out of Australia. And at first it was like one, and I was like, that's interesting. And then I'm like, well, where are they?
They're on fire there with animal rights.
They're very active,
veganism.
Yeah. And I think this is Melbourne's probably a bigger city. So quite an interesting experiment. I think, we'd like to probably see it repeated in America.
You could do a really rigorous social experiment on this, just like they've done with resume screenings, right, with people with African American sounding names and mainstream WASPy kind of names, and the responses on those, or apartment hunters.
Right. I mean,
I can see this going.
Right. You could follow it up with a survey, because were they super excited that he was vegan, or is it more a negative connotation that a guy going around holding up, a bucket of meat is going to be more of a bro meathead, so to speak.
I sense a couple of master's theses there, even a PhD. Yeah. So, and PETA did do the same experiment in the UK, and it had similar results. They used a guy named Oliver, and Oliver, the vegan, got almost double the positive right swipes.
Interesting.
Compared to the same person with a meat centric type profile.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. So even though Valentine's Day is long past, we would encourage this to be food for thought for all you daters and non-daters out there.
Yeah, so that's our lighthearted little bit of news.
That's the warm-up.
Yeah. I wanted to focus on a piece of legislation that we talk about a lot on this show. We reference it in passing. And I want to just go a little more into detail on that, and that is the Animal Welfare Act. And so we mention it here. And I just think that it's helpful if our listeners can be more informed about the federal legal framework that broadly protects some animals in the United States. So it starts back in the 1960s, when there was actually a considerable progressive discussion in Congress covering the issues of animals in science for research and for testing.
Who thought someday we'd be looking back on the progressive 60s?
So this raised the issue of how the business itself, the business of research, right? It is a business. Some of it's publicly funded through grants, but a lot of it is commerce-oriented with the pet trade. So it raised questions of how government can regulate this business from the national level. It was modeled after some legislation that has had gone in Great Britain. The National Anti-Vivisection Society, which is a British organization, was founded back in 1875, so they had a good number of years of work ahead of the United States on developing laws to protect animals. All right. So in the mid-1960s in the United States, animals used in research, particularly dogs and cats, becomes literally a front page issue. There was a huge public and media outcry over a story about how pet dogs and cats were being stolen and ultimately sold into research facilities. In November 1965, Sports Illustrated, this I find stunning, right? Sports Illustrated covered the story of Pepper the Dalmatian, a dog who disappeared from the yard of his family in Pennsylvania and was later discovered that he had been stolen by dog nappers and then purchased by a Bronx, New York hospital where he had died during an experimental procedure, right? So this article shows up with lots of pictures and pulling at the heartstrings of dog and cat lovers who read Sports Illustrated.
Right.
So dudes, I guess, right?
Right, right.
Then in 1966, Life magazine, which is now part of the Time Life magazine complex, right? Life magazine itself stopped publishing.
Yeah, that's right.
Probably a decade or more.
I should have renewed my subscription.
Really? The death of print. So Life magazine ran a long piece about dogs and cats that had been stolen for use in biomedical research, and it was titled Concentration Camps for Dogs.
I mean, even if now, if you went and pointed out, factory farm and the confined animal feeding operations that go on, and you tried to present, a large U.S. magazine with concentration camps for cows on the cover, it would not get published.
Correct.
It'd be massive outrage, and what are you even doing? Granted, dogs and pets always get a special pass, but
sure,
still.
Because we all have dogs and cats. And that's why on the show we often ask people to, look at how you look at your dog and cat and how you love your dog or cat or your bird, and then look at a cow or like a meat rabbit or a chicken and realize that that animal really has the same range of sentience that your dog or cat has.
Right. And first you would get denial that this is even happening, right? And then you'd say you want to watch a video. And people say, no, I don't want to watch a video. This is not happening. And then you'd probably get sued with the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act for even videotaping this. And I'm just pointing this out to show in the sense like, you know, maybe we have regressed culturally in these past 40 years that some of these topics can't be discussed in common society.
Yeah, well, we'll see as the Animal Welfare Act evolves that its trajectory of evolution really slows down after it gets in place. Anyway, so they run this Life magazine runs this pictorial article called Concentration Camps for Dogs in February 1966. And that generates a lot of public support. It galvanizes animal welfare groups like the then ASPCA and Humane Society. And lo and behold, by summer, Congress passes the Laboratory Animal Welfare Act. President Lyndon B. Johnson signs it into law on August 24th of the same year.
Congress used to pass laws?
Right, and with rapidity, right?
Right.
So, interestingly, one wrinkle on this, which ties into the Sports Illustrated piece, is that a lot of hunters supported this national legislation because often it was their hunting dogs who went missing.
You know, I've heard about dog and cat nappers. I mean, does that still go on, or is that? I mean, I think it still does go on. It must be prevented slightly by this act. It would only work, I suppose, with unreputable labs or something.
There has to be more of a trail, an identity trail, and a history for each animal that's being traded by a registered animal dealer. But what does happen nowadays is that dogs are, particularly dogs listed for free to get home on Craigslist and stuff, sometimes those dogs get scooped up for dog fighting rings.
Right.
Or bait dogs to be used in dog fighting. So, anyway, so the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture doesn't sit on this legislation. He takes his directions from Congress, and he sets up a regulatory program to license dealers for dogs and cats and to have animal research facilities registered and responsive to providing annual reports and to establish humane care provisions and a system of inspections, right? So this legislation basically causes USDA to hire a whole bunch of inspectors, a little army of inspectors to go out and inspect these breeding facilities and other facilities. And also it established some basic humane care provisions and, as I said, the system of inspections. And most importantly, that it defines that the animals that are protected under this law are dogs, cats, monkeys, guinea pigs, hamsters, and rabbits, right? So think some animals are missing from that list?
Yeah, so this is really the dog, cat, monkey, guinea pig, hamster, and rabbit welfare act.
Yes, it's their appreciation society. And then, you know, the mice and rats that are the bulk of research animals get kicked to the curb. So, and it's important to understand that this legislation didn't regulate how animals are used in research. It didn't control experimental protocols. All it did was regulate how they are obtained and how they're maintained, how they're cared for at a facility.
And so both the word animal in the title is misleading and the word welfare is misleading.
and research, right? Because they're not actually governing how the animals are used in a research experiment.
Mm-hmm.
So we fast forward to 1970, where the definition of animal was expanded by Congress to include all warm-blooded animals. But it excluded farm animals, including horses, livestock, and poultry. And, of course, while we all know that mice, rats, and birds are warm-blooded, and you would guess that they'd be, or hope that they'd be included and covered, protected by the Animal Welfare Act, in fact, the USDA at that time made a calculated decision to omit these species when they drafted these regulations. And clearly that's due to special interest group pressure.
Right.
Like researchers don't want to give up their main animal model. And farmers don't want to see extra care given to cattle, goats, and bunnies, right? So at the same time that this limitation on the species covered is sort of expanded and limited at the same time, The act was expanded in regulatory protection scope to include animal exhibitors such as circuses, zoos, and roadside shows, and wholesale pet dealers, including breeders. And so all these animals, all these areas of potential animal abuse, where abuse can occur, had been omitted from the original Animal Welfare Act. And it's interesting to see that legislators were forced back to the table to expand protection for some non-human animals, and yet still they, you know, skirted under blanket coverage of all animals. Also in 1970, the Animal Welfare Act was amended to require that animals be given pain-killing drugs when appropriate, if doing so didn't interfere with the intended research goals, right? So big protection, big loophole.
Yeah, pretty big loophole.
Yeah. So this is this exception is widely invoked in a lot of research protocols. So, and tens of thousands, if not millions, of animals, if you include mice and rats, are still used in experiments involving pain and distress who do not receive any pain relief. So that's where it stands in 1970. So 6 years later, in 1976, the Animal Welfare Act was again amended, and this time it addresses humane transportation issues and also makes it a crime to sponsor or promote fighting between live birds, dogs, or other mammals in interstate commerce. And the use of civil fines for violations of the Animal Welfare Act was instituted. But prior to this, the only punishments were withdrawal of your registration. So this adds in this monetary kick. But you can see, like, the scope is, it's changing, but it's not changing as radically as it had prior, right? It becomes more incremental.
Though it does sound like originally there was no fine at all, so it was either...
You get your permit, or you don't get your permit, or you get your permit suspended.
You don't get a permit. Okay, yeah. So now it would be you could get a permit, and we'll just fine you maybe.
Yeah. So in 1985 is the next big amendments, and that is were amendments that focused almost entirely on the issues of animals used in research. So we see the act was passed in 1966. Amended in 1970, amended again in 1976, and then we go a long period, 9 years, to 1985. And so this amendment controls animal research facilities such as universities, which were required to create what are called Institutional Animal Care and Use Committees, IACUCs, which are internal governing committees that review research experiments on their facilities, right? And one big gain that animal activists got was that these committees have to include at least one member of the public, not affiliated with the institution. So I thought that was, like, good on some really persistent animal advocate group to get that in place. And so this is the first time that the Animal Welfare Act addresses what is being done with the animals as research subjects. And it also has language that requires researchers to justify how the animals are being used, and as well as report the number and the species used. So, and I contacted Chico State because Chico State does have one of these IACUC committees, these animal use committees, and I'm waiting to hear back because I'm curious who the public representative is on that committee, and see if there's any reports on what kinds of experiments are going on at Chico State. So, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. We're talking about the evolution of the Animal Welfare Act, one of the two major pieces of legislation aimed at protecting non-human animals in the United States. So, onward, in 1990, the Animal Welfare Act was again amended in ways that affected states and municipalities. State and municipal animal shelters, private shelters, humane societies, and federal research facilities were now required to hold dogs and cats for not less than five days, so more than 5 days, to enable owners to reclaim their lost pets and to allow shelters a chance to adopt out animals. Before that, these dealers were going and just scooping up animals that had been picked up recently, and owners never had a chance to reclaim their lost dog or cat.
What a nightmare.
So this is, you know, the federal government squashing down state and municipal groups that are supposed to be helping animals by saying, no, you can't do business like you were. You have to hold these animals for 5 days at least. So, yeah, so before this, animal so-called animal shelters could actually be fronts funneling dogs and cats to animal dealers. To what were called Class B dealers, and requiring these non-breeder dealers to prove that they had informed people relinquishing or selling their animals that they were indeed giving up their animal to a facility, to a breeder or an agent who would then move that animal into a research situation. So now these guys had to notify anybody that they were taking animals from that this was a possible fate of that animal. And then we go into 2002, where there's a brief amendment, which is a bad amendment. It explicitly states that birds, rats of the genus Rattus and mice of the genus Mus, bred for use and research, are excluded from coverage under the Act. That's basically the biomedical community just saying, this is what we want, and Congress gives it to them.
I wonder how much they paid their lobbyists.
Yeah, really. So anyway, every 5 years, Congress conducts a massive reconsideration of ag policies and regulations. We know that as the Farm Bill. And these omnibus legislation packages always start out with a lot of animal protection measures, but typically these animal protection measures are stripped out as the bill makes its way through the various machinations of Congress. And the last major change to the Animal Welfare Act actually occurred with the 2008 Farm Bill. And in this case, the Farm Bill included amendments at the beginning that would have delayed introduction of, for instance, cloned animal products into the marketplace, into the food stream. It incorporated animal protection provisions contained in the other humane and pet food safety bills that were active at the time. And it also would have ended the use of random source animals for research. So it would have ended the use of just any old dog or cat ending up as a research subject. Any animal that ended up, say, at a university facility for a research experiment had to have a paper trail showing where it came from. And the House version of the bill would have prohibited the use of live animals for demonstrating and marketing medical devices.
Oh, Jesus.
Had to be legislated against, right?
Yeah, right.
And also would have ended the use of random source animals. So of those, the only element that survived and passed into law in the final bill was a prohibition on the importation of live dogs under the age of 6 months and increased fines for some violations under the Animal Welfare Act to $10,000. So all those other good-sounding pieces of legislation didn't make it into the amendment for the Animal Welfare Act. They may have, they may be law now under some other acts, but not under the Animal Welfare Act. So we can see that lots of promises, albeit weak, are made at the beginning of the legislation, but even these weak provisions are like trimmed away as the bill moves through Congress.
I begin to wonder how many of these are tossed out simply as negotiating fodder.
Absolutely. I'm sure. Yeah, you have to any major group that's supporting these bills, they know they're going to have to give some give some things away. So, yeah. So anyway, and I'll let Danny talk about some points about what the Animal, quote, Welfare Act is not.
All righty. So let us summarize what's not covered by the Animal Welfare Act. Use of animals in K-12 education is not covered. Live animals in the classroom and treatment of animals used for dissection, not covered. I remember being in elementary school and the local kind of roadside zoo would show up with eagles panicked and flapping around. It was always a little disturbing. At first, it's yeah, cute animals, and then you're like, I don't think that animal wants to be in this auditorium with 500 sixth graders. Hunting, fishing, and trapping are not covered by the Animal Welfare Act, but they may be covered by state or local rules. Slaughter of food animals is not an issue covered by the Animal Welfare Act.
Right, but it sounds like it should be, right?
Right.
I mean, what is of more importance of the welfare of an animal than how it's slaughtered.
Yeah, as we discussed, neither animal nor welfare is representative in the name of that title.
Yeah.
And, you know, one would want government to be clear about general laws and rules because that's what gets in people's head. And you hear, we got an Animal Welfare Act. But we got a First Amendment right? Freedom of speech? Well, you not if they say you can't be on the sidewalk today. So, you got to keep your eye on the prize on these things. Also not covered is the slaughter of food animals, which we also will check later. We'll talk about the Humane Slaughter Act of 1978 and another show. I'm sure nothing has changed in those 35 or so years. Most importantly, animals in agriculture are excluded, which can lead to some really horrifying abuse in so-called research centers for animal agriculture. For instance, in January 2015, the New York Times published a graphic expose on the mistreatment of research animals, including pigs and cows, at the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center, a federal research center under the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So, something we pay for with our taxes was mistreating animals. And was excluded by the same government, right?
Exactly.
Among other things, the article asserted that the center had no veterinarians on staff. Surgical procedures were performed by workers without veterinary degrees or licenses. This horrific treatment was permitted under the exemption of farm animals used in agricultural research, along with our tax dollars, as we mentioned. Also not covered in the Animal Welfare Act is the treatment of pets by owners. There are state cruelty laws that apply, but hey, let's leave it up to each state to decide, you know, what your cat and dog is worth. Use of rats and mice in research is also not covered because they were specifically excluded, as we discussed.
It covers some, but it excludes so much more.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of, I bet we could work with the ASPCA or a farm sanctuary or something. I'm sure every round they probably got a list of these are the 20 things we're trying to get back on the
yeah.
bill, you know, that get thrown out. But it'd be interesting to see kind of what's their prioritized list of these things and which ones they think they can win.
Yep.
You got some notes here, Jeannie. Which one of these notes you want to discuss?
Oh, I think we should just move on to the calendar.
Oh, it's calendar time.
Yeah, because, you know, we've kind of given a short shrift in a couple of previous shows. So,
alrighty.
Coming up on Saturday, March 11th, is the Conscious Eating Conference in Berkeley. I mention it only because it's got an amazing speaker, which is Carol J. Adams, the author of she's a feminist, vegan advocate, activist, and author of The Sexual Politics of Meat, a Feminist Vegetarian Critical Theory. She is an amazing speaker, and her talk should be great. Registration is free for students, and the day includes vegan food, so I highly recommend it. If you want to register, go to the United Poultry Concerns website. That's upc-online.org, and go register. And then Saturday, March 18th, the next Saturday, is the Meat Out at Animal Place from 11:30 to 3:30 in Grass Valley. And you can join Animal Place for a Meat Out celebration and enjoy samples of all these catered and prepackaged vegan goodies like hot dogs, various vegan cheeses, cookies, and you can visit their wonderful animals. So you can register for this special event at animalplace.org, and I highly recommend it. And then coming up, we have some activism going on the Chico State campus on Monday and Tuesday, March 20th and 21st, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Brave the Cage is back. They're going to be in front of between Glenn and Siskiyou Hall on the Chico State campus. And what they have is a human-sized battery cage. The campaign's mission is to educate the public about what life is like for 95% of hens raised for egg production. Participants are invited to brave the cage and experience confinement inside a human-sized battery cage. You can check out the Chico for Animal Rights Facebook page or the Animal Place website for more information. And also, you can check out the Non-Human Radio Archives on KZFR.org to check out our interview from March 23rd, 2016, with our interview with Stephanie Bain, who was the Brave the Cage coordinator. So that is it for the calendar. If you have an event or other news to share, go ahead and send an email to me at chicovegan@gmail.com and tell me all about it. And let's have the quote real quickly, Danny.
The first century Roman scholar Plutarch challenged the idea that man is a natural carnivore, which is a common and pathetic excuse used by meat eaters to justify their meat eating. It appears to have been a common justification in ancient times, too, so Plutarch wrote about it. The following two passages from Plutarch's work, quote, on the eating of animal flesh, comprising volume 12 of the Moralia. First passage.